From WHQR Public Media in Wilmington, North Carolina, it's the Coastline Candidate Interviews. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. The city of Wilmington boasts a population of around 122,600 people. That's a U.S. Census Bureau estimate for 2018. But the largest municipality in New Hanover County is still expected to grow over the next quarter century. And planning officials project a population spike of about 57,000 more people by the year 2040. That's only about 20 years out. Bill Sappho first won a seat on Wilmington City Council in 2003. After an appointment to the mayoral seat to finish out the term of Spence Broadhurst in 2006, Mayor Sappho went on to win re-election six times. If he wins a seventh term, he will have logged 15 years as mayor and 4 years as a city council member, nearly two decades in a Wilmington city government position. Mayor Bill Sappho, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you, Rachel. Good to be here.
You are a member of a newly formed State Film Council, the governor's advisory council on film, television, and digital streaming. The governor announced the creation of the council earlier this week. Tell us what this council is actually expected to do and what your role would be.
Well, our role would be to advise the governor on film issues and what we as a state can do to improve the film industry and bring more film and filming and production into the community, into the state. To identify outliers or things that we think could be problematic in the future in respect to maybe legislation that may be, you know, being talked about at the state level, like we saw what happened with HB2, to also tell him what we can do to improve the climate, whether it be the grant program. Obviously, we had a great credit program with the state a number of years ago. We had record number of productions.
And that's the first thing that comes to mind with something like this. I mean, whenever you talk to people about how to boost film activity in the region, it's always, well, once upon a time, we had that tax rebate, and that really worked, it's gone. So
it did work, and that was something that we all fought for, and we fought for it ferociously. We said, we've got to have this. This is great for the state. It went away. The business went away, went to primarily to Georgia, and we lost a lot of film workers to Georgia. And, you know, it was like, we told you so. So then they've come back with this film grant. The good news is the film is coming back. Television is coming back. And primarily most of it is coming back to the city of Wilmington, which is a good thing. The issue that we see going forward is that we are limited in the amount of money that we are allocated now by the state of North Carolina at $30 million. More and more productions want to come. We're almost at the end of that pot of money. We are going to be going back to the state at some point in time to ask for additional monies. But we're having the best year this year as opposed to the last combined, 16, 17, and 18 combined. We're having the best year in 2019. We have currently three productions in town. Obviously, Halloween is a big one. Reprisal is another one. Of course, another one coming in called the Georgetown Project. And we're proud to see film come back, and we're proud to see our film workers coming back and getting jobs here and being able to stay in the community, and hopefully that will continue.
And so this is really partly about continuing to advocate for beefing up the pot of money.
Absolutely.
Now that the New Hanover County Commission has decided to pull out of funding WAVE Transit, what does that do to your plans, Wilmington's plans, for a more robust public transit system? There's always been this tension between the city and the county on that issue, but where are you with it now?
We are going to continue to fund WAVE. We feel that it is a very important thing for our community and for our citizens. We have obviously a certain percentage of our population that cannot afford a car and uses that public transportation system to get to their jobs, get to, you know, if they have to go to the doctor and go shopping. We also have a group of people that are moving to the community that would love to see the use of public transportation be more robust. We're hearing that through this campaign season. What can we do to improve the quality of WAVE Transit? The city has always been a very strong supporter of WAVE Transit. Now, and I have to explain to people that WAVE is a private authority run with a group of people with an executive director that runs it and comes to us from time to time and asks us for money. We've on average, have given them about $1.4 million a year. The county has primarily given them about $300,000 a year. Primarily, their funding is paratransit. And ours is primarily coming from the general fund, and we believe strongly in WAVE transit.
But the catch-22 has always been you have to beef up the choice rider contingent, and you can't really do that until you beef up the routes and the frequency of service and all that.
So they're trying, or they have been trying for a number of years, to build a regional system that would incorporate, obviously, the unincorporated areas, Leland, Pender County, you know, have it really a good, strong regional transportation system. The unfortunate thing is they don't have the funding resources necessary to be able to accomplish that mission. And so we're going to be evaluating that WAVE transit. And it might be that the city may take it back and have it, you know, the city of Wilmington were to run it. But if that were to happen, then it would be primarily in the incorporated city limits of Wilmington. And then if anybody wanted to expand the routes to, let's just say, Leland or to the North Campus or the VA Center out at the airport, then we would, you know, put an individual contract together with whoever wanted us to expand those routes. I'm just saying we may be looking at that in the future, because if the county is going to pull out of this system, then we're going to have to evaluate it based on the fact that the city of Wilmington would be then the biggest partner at the table, and something that I think we could do very well if we were to take it over.
Listener John wrote this question, I think, before the news broke that the county was going to pull out of funding WAVE transit by 2021. He asks, is there any consideration being given to bus, rapid transit, light rail, or other modalities currently unavailable here?
Light rail, yes. We're studying the realignment of CSX rail outside of the city of Wilmington. I think that's something that concerns all of us because of the volume of traffic that's coming out of the port. Primarily, most of that traffic is being moved out by truck. 95% of those containers being moved out by truck, which of course, you know, adds to our road issues and road congestion. If we can move more of that traffic or more of that cargo out of the port by rail, with a shorter route being over the Cape Fear River and up 421, we would love to do so. So we've hired a rail realignment coordinator, a gentleman that used to work for Norfolk Southern, very competent, very good person. And if that were to happen, and it's more of a long-term project, maybe it could take up to 10 years, that would give us the impetus to be able to use that rail line, which goes through the middle of the city, for light rail. So that's the option that we're looking at. But I do think, in the long run, that it's going to happen because there's 38 rail crossings in the city of Wilmington. And if you take a train from the port to the Davis Yard, which is over in Nevassa, it takes about 2.5 hours to do that. So with the traffic congestion that we have in the city, the faster we can get that cargo out of the Port of Wilmington, cross the river, and open that up for rail line, it would be great for all of us.
A resolution came before City Council earlier this month to request more understanding on the potential sale of New Hanover Regional Medical Center. Council ultimately determined the resolution that was on the table was really built into the process as it was, but it passed 5-1 with a minor change. Where are you on the issue now, and what role should the city play, should city leaders play, in shepherding the process? And I ask this question because there was a Star News editorial this morning about surprises and processes and how government is operating. And with the number of surprises that have dropped on the public recently, including the possible sale of NHRMC and the denial of continued funding by the county for WAVE transit, why should members of the public trust this process now?
Well, I think that the county commissioners have heard the public, and I think that's why they've put together an advisory group to review it and to get the information out there. This process is not going to be done in a couple of months. I think it's going to take some time to be able to address all of the questions that people are asking, so that the county commissioners, in their due process, if they decide to make the sale, they'll have all of the information at their disposal, but more importantly, that information will also be disseminated to the community and to the people that have concerns about this. This is the largest sale in this county's history. It's a very large entity. It's very important to the community. Healthcare is very important to each and every one of us. We love our hospital. It's one of only three county hospitals in the entire country. Not one dime of taxpayers' money has ever gone into it. And it's done very well, and people love the care that's there. And they're concerned about the level of care, what it will look like in the future if it does go to a profit or a nonprofit entity. So they've got a big task in front of them. And I think that, from my perspective at least, I think this gives them an opportunity to reset the dialogue and to build trust within the community. It might be the right thing to sell the hospital. We don't know that yet until all of the facts are out there. And I've always said you shouldn't formulate an opinion until you've obtained the facts. And I would hope that this new organization and this new group that they've put together will obtain those facts, will make quarterly. We've asked them to come to the city council and just share whatever information they can with us. It would be another venue for people to be able to get information and to get out into the community and to tell people what is happening and to be able to ask the questions. I think the concern that most people had was the fact is that this is a done deal. It's going to be sold. It's going to happen in a couple of months. We're not going to have an opportunity to really have a say in this. And I think that they have they're listening to the public, and I think that they're going to take their time and do it right. I felt more assured when former council member Jason Thompson came to the city council. He's the incoming chair and shared with us their process. And I think that process has got to be deliberate, and it's got to be where people can get in and hear what's happening in those meetings, and for that and to be very transparent in the process so people can get all the information necessary before they make a decision.
There's a great deal of public discussion, and this is really across the country, about the need for affordable housing. And one person who was very active on that issue in Wilmington, Paul D'Angelo, moved to Asheville, and he now works for that city as community development program director, where he says there's genuine support for affordable housing initiatives versus here, he says, where it took years just to form a joint committee on the issue with the city and the county. And that was something that had no cost. So where do you, Bill Saffo, put affordable housing on the list of priorities? Is it a fair characterization to say that Wilmington just hasn't thought it's really up there in the top five?
First of all, the city has always been supportive of affordable housing. We spend about $2.5 million on affordable housing initiatives. This year, we'll probably spend about $4.5 million. And to date, about 400 families have taken advantage of the city's housing initiatives to purchase homes in the city of Wilmington. We have seen this problem. We've seen it coming to us. But we also understand that the vast majority or the vast that the county has a lot of land left, especially in the northern end of the county. We felt that there needed to be a partnership. We have formulated this committee. We have hired an affordable housing coordinator between the city and the county, which I think is a good thing. I think it's a step in the right direction. I think moving forward, and I think Paul, since he's gone up to Asheville and we've seen some of their models, I think that this community is going to have to ask the question and go to the polls at some point in time to designate a certain amount of funding from taxes that would go for affordable units or workforce housing or attainable housing, whatever you want to call it. But I think today is probably the number one issue. Traffic has always been ranked up there as number one or number two, but I think that affordable housing is definitely the number one issue, not only in the city but also in the county. As we have more and more people moving into this community, there's more demand than there is supply. The cost of housing has gone up, so whatever we can do to bring more housing in play, it's good for all of us.
And frequently, I hear this from listeners, when we talk about affordable housing, Don sent in a question that says, considering the city has partnered with private developers and companies to serve an interest such as the River Place development focused on affluent populations, what will the city do to partner with other entities to serve the underserved populations? And he is asking about the food desert problem, but then somebody else asked, why are you not requiring any affordable housing in River Place after all the affordable housing talk?
Good question. When we did River Place and when former council member and former Mayor Pro Tem Earl Sheridan was on there, we passed a resolution that any city property, anything that the city had an ownership in, that we would have to look at it with an affordable housing component in it. So, for example, the new development that we're looking at up here on the north end between 3rd and front there at the gateway into the city of Wilmington will have an affordable housing component in there. Now, we're working through on what they call the request for proposal with East West, which was the developer that is also doing River Place that has come forward to develop this piece of property. In the original scope of their proposal, they have allocated 5%. We want more than that. So we're in the process right now of currently negotiating that number up. I would like to see more around 30%. So that's number one. So anything that we own that we can ask for affordable units to be put in there. So we are going to ask for that. Number two, in the state of North Carolina, because a lot of people have asked me this question, in the state of North Carolina, we as a city council on a private development cannot force developers to put in affordable housing. Obviously, we can. They know our sentiment. They know that it's very important to us. I think if they put it into the project, obviously it's much more supportive if they do that.
If you're partnering with developers.
If we're partnering and the city owns the property, yes, we can ask for that. We can definitely specifically ask for it because we are the citizens, the taxpayers own that piece of property, and we're representing the taxpayers. So, yes, we can ask for that. Just like we're doing with the Castle Street project there with the old city bus garages, we're requiring about 30-some units that are going to be affordable there because we own the property. So when we have ownership in property, we can do that. And going to your question, too, real quick, Rachel, in respect to the food desert, especially something we've been talking about on the north side, is a grocery store is part of that development process. So we will have a grocery store on the north end, which, you know, that's something that the community has been talking about for quite some time. But it won't only support people on the north end of downtown, but it will also support all of downtown, which is something that we've all been working very hard on for the last couple of years.
Listener Sarah wrote in. And you can hear from the questions that she poses. Do you consider unmanned car washes and storage units good for positive economic growth? Do you consider raising old growth live oaks for unmanned car washes and storage units a good thing for the character of our city? Do you think unmanned car washes are a good use of natural resources? So I think it's clear how Sarah feels about unmanned car washes and storage units. But we do hear about new storage facilities all the time going up. And, you know, some people say, is that how we want to develop the city?
We don't want to develop the city that way. But remember now, in by state statute, every single piece of property in the city and in the county has got to be zoned something, residential, commercial, office and institutional, mixed use, urban mixed use, whatever the case may be. So when our planning department looks at property, you know, they'll say this is what this should be based on certain criteria. Obviously, a lot of this stuff is market driven. Obviously, for some particular reason, storage units that are being built, there must be some need for it. I guess we have a lot of junk. Everybody has a certain amount of junk that they put into these. I don't want to call it junk, but you know, they store things in units. I obviously would love to see less of that, less car washes. You know, I talked to some car wash owners that have been in the car wash business for a number of years, and they says, my God, you know, when I first got here, there was maybe 3 car washes. Now there seems to be like 10 car washes, and it seems like the proliferation of these storage facilities. I can't determine what the market conditions are and if these things are good or not, but obviously I wouldn't like to see that. And going back to the oak trees, every piece of property that is developed, the developer of that piece of property has got to file with the city. I don't know how it is in the county, but with the city, a tree survey to identify every single tree on the property. Now, by state statute or by our statutes, we allow for the tree removal for the essential site improvements, which would be the building, parking, and the driveway coming in. If they take anything out that is over and above that, then there's a significant fine that's paid for that. So we try to incentivize the developer to keep as many trees as possible because there's a significant fine that goes along with cutting down those trees. If you take down one tree, you're going to be replacing it with about 7 trees, or you're going to pay a significant fine to the city of Wilmington for that. So and in regards to heritage oaks and significant trees, nobody wants to see those come down. I think there was a public outrage with what was going on in Ogden with the possibility of a car wash that was going to be built up there. I also want to say that, you know, we had a voluntary annexation of a piece of property up in the Ogden area where Publix is, and the city took a major stand working with the state and working with the developer to move the Ogden Oak that was in the right-of-way, and they spent about $280,000. I don't know if anybody saw that process, but it was a significant process where they moved a significant oak tree that was probably several hundred years old. They moved it over, spent a lot of money doing it, and we were very proud of that process. And we tried to incentivize developers to move trees, spade trees, and move them as opposed to cutting them down. And I think that we're moving in that direction as a community.
One community member was just talking to me about what he called lost opportunities, and he held up Echo Farms as an example of that. Green space now is just gone, and it's now with a developer. And there was some pushback, the city saying there's already a municipal golf course, we don't really need another golf course. What about just giving up that precious green space that you can never get back? I mean, do you see how someone would look at that, the way that deal went down, as a lost opportunity for the city?
Well, I've pushed very strongly to try to protect or try to get some of that property for a park, understanding that we had no idea that Echo Farms was going to close. I personally have always felt that the property owners at Echo Farm owned the golf course. I did not know a private entity owned the golf course that could turn around and develop it at some point in time. Saying that, if we would have known that Echo Farms was going to close before we proposed the 2016 parks bond, there would have been an opportunity to put Echo Farms on that parks bond and let the voters make that decision. That's number one. Number two, the owner of that property has the right, by law, to determine whether they would sell that property to the city or not sell that property to the city. We did approach him about the possibility of a sale, but we also felt that the number that he was talking about was pretty significant. And we didn't, plus the fact is we had just passed the park bond in 2016 of $38 million and had to make an adjustment to the tax rate to pay for that. This would have been a significant cost to us, which was not in the budget at the time. And that's why we went to the county to see if there was, first of all, an opportunity to do a partnership, which they said that they would do with us, but not for the entire tract of land. So what we did do is we did purchase the tennis courts, they did purchase the pool and the area there where the driving range was, and we are putting in a walking trail in that particular area. So there was some opportunity there, and we just took advantage of what we could do at the time.
Now, we're getting close to the end. I do want to get to what you're really proud of over this last term. But first, term limits. If you were looking at another municipality, you're not involved. Would you say it's a good idea to have a mayor in place for nearly two decades? Do you think change in elected officials is important at the municipal level?
If the mayor's doing a good job, he'll be reelected. And if he's doing a lousy job, term limits are there. I don't like the fact that I have to run every 2 years. And it's a tough thing in a municipal government to have to run every 2 years. I don't have gerrymandered districts like Congress.
You know, Leland recently changed their setup so that the mayor now serves a four-year term.
I agree. I mean, I would like to see. I think a mayor with the issues that he has to contend with or she has to contend with, it's significant. And they're always contentious at times. And I see Mayor Riley and what he did in Charleston. He was the longest serving mayor in American history with 40 years of service. So I believe that elections are your term limits. And if you're doing a good job as an elected official, you'll be voted in. And if you're doing a lousy job, they're going to vote you out. I'm not protected by gerrymandering. I get voted on by all of the people, all of the citizens of this community. And it's a great job. I love the work because this is my hometown. I want to see it do well, and they'll have to make that decision, not Bill Saffo.
So, what do you think is different about Wilmington because you've served?
Well, I think that we have taken the plans that the people have put together, the Vision 2020 plan, the revitalization of downtown Wilmington, which is what I ran for when I ran on in 2003, wanted to revitalize downtown Wilmington to see what is happening down here, has been phenomenal. And I'm proud of that because I remember downtown Wilmington in the 60s and 70s, what a vibrant place it was. And to see this energy coming back to downtown is great. The completion of the Riverwalk, which is something we've been talking about for years. the Cross City Trail, which people said we couldn't do and shouldn't do in 2008. Now we have almost 20 miles, and we'll be putting in another 20 miles of trails throughout our community. The additional park space that we have today, 744 acres. The mixed-use concepts that we're looking at, where people are living closer to where the services are, so you don't have to drive 6 miles round trip to go to the grocery store, and a lot of other things that we've done. But I'm very proud of the work that we've done here, and I hope people see that I'd like to get things done.
You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. Wilmington Mayor Bill Sappho, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Rachel.
When we come back from this break, we'll meet Devin Scott, who is challenging the incumbent. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline. You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Today we're exploring the issues facing residents in the city of Wilmington as they consider which candidates will best serve their interests in this year's municipal elections. Earlier, we met six-term Mayor Bill Sappho, who's had no trouble trouncing challengers with a smaller margin of victory in 2009, winning just 61% of the vote. But in later elections, Bill Sappho won 71%, 92%, 95%, 85%, that's in chronological order. This year, he faces challenger Devin Scott, who served on the board of the Cape Fear Economic Development Council. Devin Scott says he founded a tech consultancy and helps business startups make digital technology decisions. He was a speaker at TEDx Airlie, and he founded Eidolon Institute, an agency that helps regional startups. He says he works with local organizations to help promote economic development throughout the region. Devin Scott, welcome to Coastline.
Glad to be here.
So in the bio you sent us, you say you work with local organizations to help promote economic development throughout the region. How specifically do you do that?
So I spent a lot of time volunteering and working with the Network for Entrepreneurs in Wilmington. A lot of that is introduction, helping set up events, filming, broadcasting, and working with individuals, including startups for especially in the tech sector, which is where my specialty is, providing solutions. And by that broad word just means software, code, and a lot of other tools.
You've also said that you spend time devoted to Wilmington through volunteering and the development of tools that serve the city. What do you mean by that?
One of the my favorite experiences was working with Step Up Wilmington as a volunteer coordinator, facilitator for, their programs. I put together some curriculum for their ambassador program for leadership and entrepreneurship, and also helped with their goal-setting program.
And for those who aren't familiar with Step Up Wilmington, tell us what they do.
Well, they're a wonderful organization that works to help people overcome barriers into the job economy. And those barriers could be anything. It could be transportation, your first language, or even being new to the area, not having a network in which to onboard into the work sector. I've also worked on creating tools after Hurricane Florence, a software tool that involved a lot of phone calls and a lot of organizations to get people back into homes after the displacements occurred from water damage.
How did that tool work?
Well, it didn't work great, to be completely honest. It was one of those panic actions. My family had an extra room, and we opened it up for a family. And the moment we put up on the Facebook Marketplace, in the first minute, we got 12 responses, and we were overwhelmed with the amount of people we couldn't help. So being a software guy, I spent the next 2 days putting together a piece of software that connected people who had space with people who'd lost space, speaking with the real estate agents and the property managers. That was the biggest problem, including the nchousingsearch.org. They had this list of people, but they couldn't sort through it. But sorting through names and matching people, that's a software problem.
You have a really unique perspective especially for Wilmington. You spent your early years in Brooklyn, New York.
Correct.
Then you moved here when you were a really young teenager. And tell us about how you see the city now, and give us kind of the global view of your vision for the city of Wilmington.
Wilmington opened up a lot of opportunities for me. I've done art here. I've built businesses here. I've built a family here. And it's interesting because the time that I was growing into those opportunities, I had to search for them. And once I found them, they were strong. So I'm familiar both with the fact that there is a lot that the city has to offer, but that it takes a lot of digging to uncover them, especially if the job market might not necessarily be amiable to what you're looking for, or if you haven't found a network or community or society that serves what you need. My goal is to not only strengthen those individual locations, the businesses, the nonprofits, especially in the tech sector and in the arts sector, because the arts sector is struggling as we lose stages one after another after another. I would love to make it more accessible and more transparent.
How do you strengthen nonprofits and arts organizations as part of city government?
Well, city government has a unique position in that people see us. You can't make an overt statement to say, well, support this organization, support that organization, but you can give them opportunities. The same way we give any developer an opportunity with an RFP. We can look for opportunities through block grants or other federal funding programs to give them an opportunity to apply for something. And there's also a call for collaboration. Wilmington is notorious for lacking collaboration in a lot of places. That's actually a Southeast regional issue. And by championing that collaboration, whether you are a elected leader or any kind of leader, you make an overt statement for something that we truly need, rather than creating the silo after silo non-network system that we're very used to and prone to building here.
What are some other examples of collaboration regionally that would benefit the city of Wilmington?
Well, I think I'd start by saying that we need to think about the city of Wilmington as being beyond the city. The city itself can't grow. It can't expand in any major way. We need to start thinking about New Hanover, and we need to start thinking about Pender and Brunswick. We need to imagine a type of tri-county collaboration, a coalition even, to grow and survive off of each other's strengths. We're running out of land in Wilmington. We have 3,000 acres left of developable land and a dearth of industrial real estate. So as we're trying to attract businesses, we don't necessarily know where to put them. We need to make these connections to our neighboring counties so that we can grow together by surviving off of all of our assets.
Well, how would you do that? I mean, I think it's reasonable to speculate that, say, New Hanover County commissioners probably know Brunswick County commissioners and probably interface with them on some level on a regular basis.
Well, I would make a statement that the legitimacy of the campaign I'm running is a statement, is a validation that we have a new series of thoughts, a new series of attitudes towards leadership. And I think we need to play off of that and make that overt statement towards collaboration. It's not enough to know people, but we don't have a regional vision. In 2013 and 2014, we actually had a Gartner report come up for New Hanover that mentioned very distinctly that we needed to make that collaboration. And over a series of focus groups and online surveys, time and time again, leaders in government, in the private sector, in the public sector, all said that we lack regional vision. But we haven't made that statement yet. Now, that's since 2013. It's time to make that vision and time to make it with our neighbors.
We learned earlier this week that New Hanover County was going to pull out of funding by 2021 for the public transit system in the region. And this is a system that the city of Wilmington has supported. It's always been a challenge finding the funding for this and finding a way to increase choice riders at the same time that you need to increase service to get those choice riders. It's like this impossible catch-22. Do you have ideas about that now? And what did this announcement earlier this week do to your ideas about that?
Well, what it gave me was a sense of greater urgency. We have until July 2021, but we're definitely going to lose some of our partnership with the county, which didn't provide that much money. It was about 5%, but it's still incredibly important for an organization that's around $750,000 in deficit. we cannot grow our region economically without having strong public transportation. And if you look at any model city, whether it's Savannah, if you're looking at Chattanooga, if you're looking at Charleston, it's part of the blueprint. It's part of the template. We can't think about public transportation as being anything except for an investment for economic development. And so our attitude needs to change. I actually spent some time speaking with Wave and with their mobility operator, and what we hear is a conversation between the city and with public transportation, and that the city feels that they're bailing out our public transportation services because of that deficit. The county obviously has made overt statements that they want to pull out, but meanwhile, what public transportation here needs is both money and direction, which they're not getting. And that's actually an extension of that regional vision conversation.
So how do you foster that kind of regional collaboration or cooperation on issues that the county commissioners, for instance, aren't remotely interested in?
Well, vote. We engage a greater amount of civic engagement, and our votes allow us to decide who our leaders are. And further, a vision does a lot. Without a vision, the people will perish. If we say overtly that we want to grow into a financial tech sector or into a resort town, and we can foster that that collaboration and everyone gathers around that idea, well, now we have a direction. Without it, what you have is action simply for the sake of action and growth by coincidence, which is never going to be a successful model.
Are either of those visions that you would want to promote?
I'm very, now, of course, my bias is obvious, but I'm very in favor of financial technology. I'm also a big sustainability advocate. So I believe in our environmental and life sciences sector, given the assets of our region, the university, and the Marbionic facility, and just so many other factors, including just the amount of health and wellness workers we have. We in the county have a way above the national average of proprietors working in those sectors, and we've actually seen growth in their income up to 71% in the past earlier in the decade. I'd love to foster that and allow them to succeed, thrive, so that we can use those strengths and really move in people from different areas in a certain talent pool based off of the fact that we have experts in quality of life.
You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. Today, we're meeting the two people who hope to be the next mayor of Wilmington. Right now, talking with Devin Scott, who is challenging incumbent Mayor Bill Saffo. The Star News published a letter today from Raymond Groh, who writes, "I've read the statements made by the folks running for mayor and city council. Most of what is said is platitudes about managing growth, improving wages and housing, and protecting the environment." He talks about moving here 30 years ago, and while politicians talk, only a few of the things that needed to be improved or protected came to fruition. And he proposes a comprehensive plan that actually has some legal teeth to it, in which the public would have inputs. And this plan, he says, could detail protecting green space, determining what kind of development or housing should take place to meet the growth needs while protecting the beauty of our neighborhoods. What would you say to Raymond Groh, who's saying, "I'm tired of hearing about the platitudes. These are all lovely ideas, but give me specifics"?
Well, you know, the first statement is that he's right. To be fair, though, it is very hard to create a comprehensive platform that can fit on a pamphlet. Our comprehensive growth strategy is 199 pages of policy, graphs, charts, and surveys. And it requires a novel is deserved in order to really describe what we can do for a 25-year plan for a city. That being said, we do have a comprehensive growth strategy that is actually very elegant, and it does talk about our green spaces, our streetscapes, our growth, our housing. It's actually very well done, and a lot of intelligence was put behind it, but it's not necessarily – there's no evidence of it being put together in the city. Now, the corollary to that is the city strategy, which is a 7-bullet-point document that is sparse and a little bit unambitious. It doesn't actually speak to that comprehensive growth plan at all. You can tell they were written in two separate rooms, and they were. One was a planning commission job. The other one was done in the city manager's office. And if they communicated, if that strategy actually had that vision, and I know I could go on and on about vision, but it truly is important if you're trying to set a direction anywhere, then we can actually figure out ways to implement that comprehensive strategy in a way that makes sense for our regional growth.
New Hanover Regional Medical Center could be sold.
Yes.
And this was a relatively recent development. There is now an advisory group who will shepherd the potential sale or other kind of reconfiguration, possibly, of NHRMC. There has been a lot of community concern over the process. Wilmington City Council recently passed a resolution 5-1 saying that they wanted to see this not happen before 12 months were up, and there were other contingencies built into that resolution that were actually supposedly part of the existing process anyway. But what would you say to folks who are looking for some sort of assurance that this will be a transparent process? How could you, if you were elected mayor, have any influence on how that unfolds?
So to his credit, one of the things that Mayor Saffo did request at that meeting was that there was a constant report from that board regarding the process and how it would go. And the city council was extremely satisfied with that answer. And I think that needs to be fostered and continued as much as possible. Now, obviously, a lot of this is a county issue, so it's hard to guarantee that they, the hospital, or that committee are going to be transparent. But the right step is to make an overt demand, whether it's through a resolution or simply saying that the people, the majority of the county, does have this desire in mind. And I think that the council made a good move personally in representing the community through that resolution.
There's a great deal of public discussion about the issue of affordable housing these days. We actually had someone who was active on that front in Wilmington for quite a while, and he moved to Asheville, Paul D'Angelo, to become that city's community development program director, where he says Asheville is much more interested in fostering the cause of affordable housing. What would you do, were you elected as mayor of the city of Wilmington, to help that cause? And where does it fall on your list of priorities?
It is definitely the second hardest problem we have in the city, followed very closely by homelessness and the opioid crisis, because they're so multifaceted. The easy solution is to simply say we need to improve wages. Affordability will come into play once more people can afford what's on the inventory. But that isn't enough, and it doesn't help everybody. We've already discussed the fact that there are barriers to wages and barriers into the job economy, and people are already underemployed with multiple jobs. So we also need to speak to our developers. And 5% affordable housing in some of these these mixed-use dense units, constructions is not enough. And we've already come aware that we're on board to build around 3,100 new affordable units, and we need around 7,600 at the very minimum in order to meet the inventory. And the cities around our size start looking at needing 2,500 a year. We need to be on board for that. Now, one thing that I'm a really big fan of from an engineering front is the idea of creating units that are built off-site and assembled through moving parts. And there is a very large engineering movement to build more quickly that way. Now, I also know there's a sensitive issue that with my platform, my campaign, the idea of building more quickly doesn't necessarily cohere with what I'm talking about. But my problem isn't with development. It's with unintentional and irresponsible overdevelopment.
You talk about runaway development quite a bit.
Yes, quite a bit. And I think we need to speak very closely, very carefully about what we develop and why. And if we can use some of these engineering techniques and engage a greater amount of local vocational skills and make intentional decisions to give our people, our citizens who live here right now and are struggling, affordable homes and opportunities to live in ways that aren't above their means, that is the kind of intention, that is the kind of development we should focus on.
So there are going to be people listening to this who hear that and cheer you on because they want to see workforce housing, more affordable housing created in this region. There are also going to be people who listen to this and say, I'm tired of hearing about that. People can afford what they can afford. Can you make an economic case for more affordable housing in the city of Wilmington?
Yeah, so very first thing to mention is that it's a good kind of problem because it is the standard growing pain for every city that is succeeding. It's like having pain in your knees when you're a teenager. It means that you're moving ahead and you are growing healthily. Every city does have to solve that problem. And if we can get ahead of it, we can make a very large statement for our region. So that is actually an opportunity for us to be heroes. It's an opportunity for us to be to set the problem off ahead of time. It gives us an opportunity to make a statement and to to be very strong there. But the economic platform is this: a human being is the most important part of a city's infrastructure because they are generative. And when more people do better, we all do better. We give more opportunities, and then you see more growth, especially what I said about the county having an above average amount of proprietors in the region than the rest of the nation. What if we gave all those people greater opportunity to earn more and to do more work and to bring in more income from outside of our region? And that what if is a what if, but it's a what if based in reality, based off the numbers and the amount of people that are working and thriving and struggling here in the city.
So let's talk about economic growth then from other points of view. Runaway development. Well, that development is also contributing to the economy here, as you acknowledge. So what's the way to stop runaway development without putting the kibosh on economic growth?
Yeah, exactly. You can't have economic development without development. The problem is, again, a problem of priority. Our land development has outpaced our economic development and also outpaced our infrastructure maintenance. And a lot of the times, if you just change your priorities, you understand that some things have to come above others because it's simply time for them to, that attention does take away from attention elsewhere. And I talked about in my campaign a smart growth filter. Does it make sense for something to be somewhere? And again, our Planning Commission does a lot of work with this with the comprehensive plan, but I think we need to be a little bit more stringent on a lot of these programs and say, can we build something here if it's not going to lend to a grocery store also being attracted to the area? Is this going to add to the amenities? Does this structure, does this this zoning decision benefit the entire city? I also want to make a statement about the way we earn money here. The city earns most of its income from property taxes. And we could also earn from sales tax, but the county takes most of that. Now, of course, this is part of that city-county disconnect. But the reality is that we don't see a large amount of income from sales tax. Maybe it's time to renegotiate that. Or maybe it's also time to have a conversation about the fact that property tax is a fixed pie. The only way to get more from that is to build more and then to increase the property tax rate. But again, we talk about generative income opportunities. If you improve your economic opportunities by improving economic development, making these walkable neighborhoods, complete neighborhoods, public transportation, so there is more regional and local economic activity going on, also exciting investors and all the other things we can do, well, now you've had an opportunity to see sales tax income improve and grow without having to raise the rate. Looking for those generative opportunities when the opportunity is there is going to be one of the key things that we do.
We've had questions about food deserts and what to do about those. Do you have that? Sounds like a component of the overarching economic philosophy you just explained.
Yes.
But how would you address food deserts?
Well, the good news is already being addressed, and we simply need to copy that model. It is a shame and actually a travesty that people need to leave their zip code in order to get fresh vegetables. There is currently a Northside Co-op project that members of my campaign are currently consulting on and engaged in. And as we've seen, the East-West Partners new development happening at the gateway to the city also promotes the idea of having a grocery store in there. Now, a lot of that project doesn't make sense, but a lot of it does. And here's the key thing about where it's positive. Grocery stores can only be placed where there are rooftops enough in order to serve that community, in order to serve the grocery store. By creating a series of units, you create the rooftops along with the space for the grocery store. So that opportunity is almost necessary to pursue in that regard. I would love to see more affordable units there, and I would love to see more opportunities for local entrepreneurship in those storefronts. And those are regional programs that we can pursue as well.
There are a lot of big expenses coming down the pike for the city, including upfitting buildings so that they can withstand stronger hurricanes. Sea level rise is also, as we know, occurring, and we see that evidenced in downtown Wilmington on Water Street. There are more days of what we call nuisance or sunny day flooding, and Water Street and across the river, Battleship Park gets flooded on a pretty frequent basis.
Yes.
What should the city be doing about this?
Well, the first question is what the city shouldn't be doing, and that's not removing more trees. The fact that they are the most effective water displacement unit in the city, the fact that they provide, they sit in pervious ground, they are windbreaks. A lot of our resiliency, our ecological resiliency, is based on the fact that we are in this weird situation where we're both in a marsh and also surrounded by tall pines and hardwoods. And when we disrupt that balance, we ruin that resiliency. And talking about climate change, well, we're also contributing to the problem when we remove our carbon sinks. We really need to protect and treasure those assets as much as possible.
So downtown Wilmington, though, that's less about trees. I mean, what would you do there?
Obviously. So, again, more of what we shouldn't do. We have a recent development where we've avoided making some flood concerns. We need to be more concerned with our new developments and making them flood resilient.
And that's this edition of the Coastline Candidate Interviews. Devin Scott, thanks for being with us and sharing your views.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks also to Wilmington Mayor Bill Sappho. Coastline's technical director is Ken Campbell. Coastline producer is Caitlin Freund. News producer is Rachel Keith. Coastline is a production of WHQR Public Media. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at WHQR.org. Get the podcast. Find it on the HQR app. Early voting is underway. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.